Yeah, no, that's a good one. I mean, I know you spend a lot of time just crafting. I mean, almost every blog post is just, you know, it's one of those that you want to read and obviously spread the word about. And that's, you know, I think you've done an amazing job really building that up. Well, let's go ahead and just change gears here into the 4-hour body, because that is the massive book that you've been working on for quite a number of years with all these crazy experiments. How long has it been? 2 years?
3 years. 3 years of actual writing and a decade of gathering data. So that's a lot. It's been a lot. This is the culmination of, God, it's like my life's work, this thing. It's hard to believe how much time has gone into this. But you know, I'm happy with it. But like you said, it's quite a big cookbook.
It's an interesting, it's one of those that you can just flip through and find something fascinating and something that can help you. You know, when you and I were first, I think you were throwing out some titles and you said, you know, how to make yourself superhuman. And, you know, I'm like, oh, that's a great title. And, you know, that's really what this is all about, is all about either rapid fat loss, gaining more muscle, even incredible sex, becoming superhuman. But so let's, you know, some things that jumped out at me. One was 4 ways to make failure impossible, and it's almost counterintuitive, some of those.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think part of it is really around, for entrepreneurs, I mean, if it's like, if we don't have our health, we really don't have anything going on, and it sounds trite, but it's true. So I know many entrepreneurs, business owners I talk to, interact with, I mean, literally just today I was with my, one of my forum groups that I meet with, and I'd say 3 or 4 out of the 5 of them were talking about, hey, I'd really like to, you know, God, I'd like to lose some weight here, I'd like to do this, and you know, it's been a common theme. So what are some of those things that, you know, that are those counterintuitive ways to not fail on these things that we want to do?
I will jump right into that, because I think that's the most important part of the book, and that's why the first 40 pages or so are dedicated to failure proofing whichever program you choose. I want to answer one common question first, because I know that it's perhaps the most common question, and that is why the hell I went from work and productivity and management and so forth to the physical body, because it seems like a complete disconnect. So I want to explain that really quickly, and then I'll jump into that.
Okay.
The answer is my obsession with physical tracking predates anything related to business by at least a decade. So I've been tracking almost every workout since age 18, and I've wanted to write this book for far longer than the 4-hour work week. But I wanted to wait until I had access to the best scientists, best doctors, best athletes, coaches in the world, and I do mean in the world, before writing the book. And the 4-hour work week was the tool that I used to get access to those people and their resources. So then I set out to do all the experiments and to do experiments on other people and really just say, I've tried all these 1,000 things. Here are the 3 that I was able to use that produced obscenely disproportionate results with not just me, but men and women of these various age groups. Like, these are the 3 things that you should try for these various things. So that just explains the background. But to relate it to your point and entrepreneurs just very quickly, you may have noticed in the introduction to the book, there's an anecdote about Richard Branson, the billionaire founder of Virgin, the Virgin Empire. And he was part of a mastermind on Necker Island, his private island, and one of the entrepreneurs, you may have even been there for all I know.
I was there, sir.
There you go. So asked, how do you improve your productivity, or how do you become most productive? And Branson's response was, work out. And he said, I get 3 to 4 hours of more productive time per day by working out. And the body, improving the body, meaning how your body functions as a physical machine, is easily the fastest way to improve your mental and cognitive performance. And we can go into that later, because I've measured all of this stuff. But for those who don't even care about losing fat, don't care about going to the gym, just to increase revenue or increase productivity, from a business standpoint, it makes very, very clear sense. Okay, so to jump into the failure proofing, a few things right off the bat. So the first is making it conscious, making whatever your current state is conscious and clear. So I did an analysis of the most successful winners of transformation challenges over the last 10 years, including Body for Life. Their diets were different in some cases, their workouts were different. The one most consistent piece was they had before and after photographs that they kept in front of them somewhere that they would visit frequently on a daily basis. So people would take before and after photographs, and believe me, no matter how good you think you look, before photographs or just photographs in general, pretty unflattering, right? So take these photographs, and many of these people would put them on the refrigerator. You don't have to do that, but use them as motivation and as a reminder of why you're changing your behavior. Right? That was the most consistent factor. So make it conscious. You really need to be aware of your current state. Secondly, is to make it competitive. And it's very simple to do this. So one of my friends who's in the book, he lost, I don't know what it was, 50 pounds, and a very smart guy, works at Google, makes a very good living. I mean, I'm sure it's in the six figures. And he decided with a friend that they would pay each other each $1 if they missed a workout. And so they plan to go to the gym, let's just say 3 days a week, and if one person missed the workout, they would pay the other $1. So this is an amount of money that makes absolutely no difference to either of these people, but the psychological response to that was that he ended up losing 50 pounds and went from never having run a mile since high school to finishing marathons. And it wasn't because his training was necessarily the best, wasn't because his diet was necessarily the best, it's because he used that psychological setup. So you want to make it competitive and you want to make it a game of some type. And then I would say lastly, and I'm skipping around a bit, but lastly it would be you have to track things, okay? And track sounds very labor-intensive. It doesn't have to be labor-intensive. So I'll give you one example. Food logs are very common. So people track what they eat, and then they write down the calories and quantify everything. And that can be consuming. It doesn't have to be, but it can be very time-consuming. And what researchers have found to be more effective is just taking a photograph of your meals before you eat. Taking a photograph of whatever you're going to eat. So like whatever you're thinking about eating, take a photograph. And these days, it's very simple. You use an iPhone, you use whatever's in your pocket, probably. And what you find is by taking that pause and becoming aware of the decision you are about to make, people begin to make better decisions. They don't need any fancy dietary advice. They don't need a new fad exercise regimen from the hottest trainer. All they need is to take photographs of their food, and they start changing their behavior, and they lose 20 pounds in a matter of 1 or 2 months without actively trying to adopt any new behavior. So the bedrock with all of these changes, whether you want to run 5 miles, 50 miles, 100 miles, or put 5 pounds of muscle on or 40 pounds of muscle on or lose 40 pounds of fat or 100 pounds of fat, it doesn't matter. These principles are exactly the same. And that is the portion of the book that's focused on failure proofing. And all of these things can be applied to business. Single one of them applies to business. And the examples in the book, there are a lot of examples from business. You might have noticed this. For example, there's something called the Hawthorne Effect, and this is named after a company, Hawthorne, that conducted a number of studies, I think it was in the 1950s, where they wanted to see the effect of increasing light, increasing the brightness of light on factory workers. So they increased the light in the factory, and lo and behold, the workers were more productive. Oh my God, that's quite an important finding. You know, increase the light, they work more. Amazing. And then somebody else in the same group decided, you know what, let's just try something else. And so they dim the lighting back to the original setting, and they worked even harder. And then they decreased the lighting, and they worked even harder. And what ended up being the case is that the workers knew they were being tracked, so they worked harder. It had nothing to do with the actual brightness of the light. And what that means is tracking doesn't need to be difficult. All it means is that you're recording something so that you're aware of it. And that could be as simple as using a Withings scale, which is it's a scale that sends your weight to the internet, and so you can see a graph of it. And doing that every morning, and measuring your weight alone is not the best way to do things. I offer a lot of better alternatives, but just by doing that every morning and then looking at a graph, your behavior will change. And there's another case study in the book of someone who did exactly that. All he did is weigh himself every morning and look at it in a graph, and he lost 30 pounds over 6 to 12 months. And his goal was not to change his behavior. He wanted to do it in the laziest way possible. So those would be a few examples, but they're all applicable to business.
What's your take on that as far as a mind-body kind of thing? Just where your attention goes is where you see results?
Oh, absolutely. They're integrally related. And I like to talk about the brain and the body, because people think of mind as something separate from the body. And I think that's where we get into a lot of trouble. Because like I was saying before, the body influences the brain, or the rest of the body, and the brain certainly influences the rest of the body. It's the central governor. It's the headquarters, so to speak. But you can see some incredible results. For example, if you take two groups, and you have one group perform strength training twice a week, and you have the other group simply visualize doing the exact same strength training twice a week, you'll oftentimes find, and this is in the literature, it's very clear, that the group that visualizes still improves their strength like 25 to 50% as much as the group that's actually going into the gym. This is with no exercise whatsoever. So there are very easy ways, very small steps that you can take to achieve some pretty amazing outcomes. I mean, my dad is one example. I mean, he was 250 roughly at 5'6", and I helped him lose 90 pounds of fat approximately and gain 20 to 25 pounds of muscle. He's 65, 66 years old. And this was done with tiny steps. Nothing, at no point did it seem like an inconvenience or imposition to his lifestyle at all. And it was just amazing to watch the transformation over time, because when you take very small steps, like removing milk from your coffee, all right, so this is one thing I observed, because I tracked hundreds of people trying these things, so I got to see the patterns. And that's where the business background was very helpful, able to spot the patterns. And what I noticed is that when people removed even the dairy from their morning coffee and replaced it with, let's just say, some cinnamon and vanilla extract, which is delicious, by the way, that they could lose an additional 2 to 5 pounds per week. Okay, that's a very significant amount of weight, and it's a very meaningful amount of weight for somebody who's, let's say, has 30 pounds to lose. You know, roughly 10 pounds for most people. If you lose 10 pounds of fat, that's going to be a size, like a shirt size. You'll go from an XL to an L, or an L to a medium. And it's those small changes that add up really, really quickly.
Losing interest. No, I totally agree. The little thing. You know, what's really interesting to me is just this fact of measuring. And it's like after college, very typical, probably athletic in college, still athletic, but I've probably gained, I don't know, maybe like a pound, 2 pounds, 3 pounds every year, just not really paying much attention. And all of a sudden, I was like looking at the scale, I'm like 179, and I'm about 5'8", and I'm like, God damn, that's pretty heavy. And simply by paying attention and weighing myself then every single day and changing just a little bit of my diet, eating leaner, not drinking every single night, and dropped like about 15 pounds, and it's really true. Just those little changes really add up. Let's talk about something really maybe somewhat controversial, Tim, and that's the polyphasic sleep, which is maybe like one of those things that people are. Maybe have heard about, haven't heard about, which is the notion that we can get less sleep, not be tired, and achieve superhuman results and productivity that way. Myth, fact, is that possible?
So the polyphasic sleep is possible. Actually, since the book was finished, I've been looking at some really interesting data related to this. So polyphasic sleep, there are a number of forms of polyphasic sleep. All that means is you're breaking up your usual single block of a target 8 hours, let's say, into multiple sessions of sleep during the day. And the more you break it up, the less total sleep you need. So there are people who follow, for example, the Uberman schedule, which is about 2 to 2.5 hours of sleep a day. And I do know people who have sustained on this. There's a lot of controversy about it. But the goal of the book is to really show people what's possible, including what's possible at the extremes. And you don't have to go to the extreme level, of course. But it's incredible what the human body can do in a very short period of time if you track your data and just pick out a few patterns. So in my particular case, as one more example, I am a career wrestler. I was an All-American in high school, but I've always had relatively weak hands, and I wanted to get better at a movement called the deadlift, which is you have a barbell on the ground that's just loaded with plates, and you pick it up off the ground to a standing position. That's it. And I could barely do 300 pounds, which sounds like a lot, but for someone with the amount of wrestling background, it's not that much, for one or two reps. And just a few weeks ago, I did 630 pounds with rack pulls without any straps, my hands, just my hands alone, no assistance whatsoever, with no weight belt for three reps. And that type of progress is not unusual if you train correctly. And you don't have to get to that point, but people assume many things are genetically fixed where they're very much genetically pliable.
And sleep is one of those.
And sleep is one of those, absolutely. So now what I would say, just as a caveat, is that if you feel like you need to only sleep 2 hours a day to get more done, you should probably focus on some of the time management, priority management points that we talked about earlier. That would be my first stop before you decide that you're going to take 8 naps a day and go to 2 hours of total sleep. I think it would probably make sense, even if just from a social standpoint. It's pretty hard to have a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a wife, much less a wife or family, if you're taking 8 20-minute naps a day. pretty socially inconvenient. But I would say to focus on, obviously, the time management first, but showing that it's just possible, that it is possible, for example, like I did, I was trained to hold my breath by David Blaine, the magician and illusionist, and went from 45-second maximum to 3 minutes and 33 seconds with one evening of training. And that means that I broke Harry Houdini's lifetime record by 3 seconds. It's absolutely unbelievable. Now, do you want to learn how to hold your breath? No. But is it a fun chapter and reads like a diary of a madman? Absolutely. It's a pretty amusing read. But for most people, just losing, let's say, recomposing their body by 20 pounds, so let's just say that's it's very seldom just about losing fat. And for that reason, I included a photograph of Marilyn Monroe doing bench presses in the beginning of the book. It was a very hard photograph to get to use because you really need the muscle for any type of functional living, and certainly for the best appearance. So for most people, it's going to be, let's just say they weigh more than 120 pounds, it's probably going to be 20 pounds of recomposition. So that might mean losing 15 pounds of fat, gaining 5 pounds of muscle. I think for most people, losing 10, gaining 10, again, fat, muscle, or gaining 20 pounds of muscle. For some guys who are particularly small and have no problem with fat, their problem is they can't gain any muscular size. That's something that most people can achieve in the span of 4 weeks. I know that sounds ridiculous, but you saw in the book itself, I was able to gain 34 pounds of muscle in 4 weeks with 2 30-minute workouts a week. I'm not saying that's average. It's most definitely not average. But again, showing you what's possible at the extremes so that whatever your goal is doesn't seem even remotely impossible is really one of the objectives of the book.